Recorded live from the mats of Radical MMA in New York City, the Martial Culture Podcast, your source for in-depth combat sports and martial arts insights with Coach Rene Dreyfus and Matt Pierce. Ring the bell and let's get it on.
I like your shirt.
Thank you. But Matt, you have to tell everybody, the listeners, about the text that I sent you at 1 in the morning on Thursday.
I'm like 4 hours asleep by now. This guy stays up so late.
Yeah, I can't really sleep too much.
Two times a week I get a text at 1 o'clock in the morning from you. Yeah, yes. I'm asleep. But the text was just, what was it, holy shit?
No, not that one.
No, not that one.
Oh, yes. Okay, but let's talk about that one. Yes, that was amazing. Okay, the title of this podcast will be Holy Shit, Holy Shit, Holy Shit, Holy Shit. The last UFC was just an utter shock value. Yeah. Did you see the highlights? No. Okay, so it's Leon Edwards, who is a very skilled, I wouldn't be unkind, but like journeyman MMA guy, very skilled in striking, but not anybody that I would think of was championship caliber. But he I don't know if you remember him, he fought one of the Diaz brothers, and he's winning the fight, but then he almost got knocked out at the end. Mm-hmm. So anyway, but he's good. He's solidly good fighter, very clean technique. Started with not a very good grappling pedigree when he started. And Kamaru Usman fought him many years ago and completely dominated him in grappling. I didn't really follow him that much because I kind of wrote him off. I'm like, oh, you know, he's good, but here. In the interim, do you know what he did last time he fought Kamaru? He got his black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He's trained, like, he turned himself into a different fighter. Oh. That's amazing. Like, really, really amazing. And the round starts. The first round starts, and I was like, 95% chance Kamaru Usman is going to win this fight and just trash Leon Edwards. Like, I'm like, this is not even like an exciting fight. This is going to just be a beatdown, right? I'm like, I don't even know why this is a title fight because whatever. I don't know. Nobody else is fighting him right now. Okay, let's watch this fight. Uh-huh. Boom, it starts. Leon Edwards is the first person in all of UFC history to take Kamaru Usman down and hold him down. Wow. Boom. They go into a little grappling exchange. He gets the most basic technique, the technique that I teach on the very first day of students' class. Double underhooks, tilt the spine, outside trip. Boom. Winds up in mount. Kamaru Usman's like, what the fuck just happened? And he's mounted. I think I've ever seen Kamaru Usman so utterly dominated in a grappling exchange.
Wow.
And Kamaru Usman's like an amazing wrestler. So he gets taken down, mounted, gets his back taken. Leon Edwards sinks in a rear naked choke with the body drive. I mean, a choke, everything is gone, like, not completely. I'm like, oh my God. This is like Amanda Nunes, Pena for number one. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what's going on? But Kamaru calms down, defends the choke, and but can't get out of the back. He can't get out of the back. And he gets saved by the bell.
Wow.
Saved round one. By the bell. And he gets up, and you can see him. He's like, motherfucker. Like, he's pissed. Then he's like, he turns on. And I'll tell you, like, I think Kamaru Usman is a very good fighter, excellent fighter. You know, he's one of the best people to fight at 170. Joe Rogan, who's, you know, the master of hyperbole, says he's the best 170er ever, which I disagree with. I mean, you're discounting Matt Hughes, you're discounting George St. Pierre especially. So I don't agree with that, but he's definitely up there. I mean, he would have the most number of title defenses if he had won this one. Well, that's getting ahead of ourselves. People were saying he's pound for pound the number one fighter in the UFC. He was just named pound for pound. He had never been taken down. You could say in the Colby Covington fight, he got taken down a little, but he was never held down. In his entire UFC career, except for one fight where he got his back taken, I think it was his first or second fight, he got tapped out. That was way before the UFC when he was just starting out. He did get choked out, but that was like, you know, when he was a nobody, right? Mm-hmm. And he didn't really know anything, right? That was like 15 years ago or something, right? He has never been taken down in the UFC, never been taken down in any round ever. The amount of rounds that he's lost, I can count on one hand. You know, he's not as dominant as Khabib, but he's very dominant, right? Yeah. And
there's a lot of green in his record.
Yeah, a lot of green, a lot of wins, right? Like the last loss that he had was, go to the last loss, it was like what, 15 years ago?
2013.
Okay, so 9 years ago.
Submission, too.
Yeah, it's a rear naked choke. He got called there. But that was 9 years ago when he was just starting out, right? And that's it. And he made it to the UFC. He won the Ultimate Fighter. He made it. And then this guy, Leon Edwards, comes in, not a grappler, dominates him and almost taps him out. He walks out back to the cage, and he's like, this motherfucker. And then he goes on to win the second round convincingly. Puts a clinic on Leon Edwards. The third round, he wins convincingly. Just like, he's like, let's get it on. Like, it's going to be a shutout. Mm-hmm. And even the first round, he got his back taken. But, you know, I have to look at the statistics. But before that, he actually connected with more strikes in the first round. So I'd have to look at the statistics in the round. I didn't look. But I think you can even make an argument that the first round could have gone to him because Leon Edwards controlled him, but he didn't really hit him. I have to look at the stats, though. I don't really know. But let's give Leon Edwards the first round. But I don't know. But second round, Usman all the way. Third round, Usman all the way. Fourth round, Usman all the way. He's on, and he's like, okay, I got this. That first round was just an aberration. I'm going to win this fight. Mm-hmm. And he's winning tremendously. I mean, it's like a blowout. Like, he's outstriking him. He's out-wrestling him. He's dominating every aspect of this fight, though he's not finishing with submissions. That's not what's happening, right? But it is definitely a very dominant performance. And all the commentators, they're going into the fifth round, and they're like, the fifth round, Usman's dominating again. And he can coast now because he's already up 3-1. So even if he loses this round, he'll win the fight, mm-hmm. right? So he's coasting, and all the commentators are like, well, you know, Usman won this fight. He's going to be the largest title defense. The fifth round goes. There's, I think, 90 seconds left. Can you look at the time of the fight? Can you look what the time of the fight is that it ends? There's something like a minute, less than around a minute left. So it's 4 minutes of Usman just winning. What's the definitive time of the fight? Can you tell me what it is?
I think it was like 4:05.
4:05. So that means there's 55 seconds left.
4:04.
4:04. So 56 seconds left till Kamar Usman is said crowned to be not only again the GOAT for the that division, as people are saying, the most title defenses ever in that division, the pound for pound champion. They're like, everybody's saying Dan Cormier, oh, it's over. Leon Edwards gave a great effort, you know, blah blah blah. They writing his obituary as he's done. Mm-hmm. He's done. And if you listen to this, so I was watching, I rewound it, listen to it, the listeners, if you get a chance, you can actually hear Kamaru Usman, someone, I think it's corner, I'm not really sure, but someone yells out, you got this champ, it's done, it's done. And Kamaru Usman steps in the pocket of Leon Edwards. He kind of relaxes. He's like, I got your number, dude. Steps in the pocket, drops his hands a little bit. Leon Edwards goes, jab, brings up a cross. Now, when somebody throws a cross, the natural thing is to parry it. So, Matt, look at my hand. If I parry and this hand goes this way, what do you see over here on the
right? Big opening.
Big opening. ABCs are striking. Jab, cross. What comes up? What do you think comes up?
Big old foot.
Right. The foot comes up with the most technically precise and beautiful tie kick, you know, I've seen in a long time. It was technically perfect. Connects right to Usman's temple. The foot wraps around the head. Temple, ear, back of the brain. Boom. He is knocked out to Lala. Like, he is in Oz. He's over there with good Glenda the Good Witch and Dorothy. He is, and the Lollipop Kids. Lollipop Kids, right? He's done. It's Tim Burr. He just collapses like someone just took the, like he was a, like a inflatable, like advertising, you know, like the Michelin Man inflatable thing. Like somebody took the air out and
unplugged his controller.
Unplugged his controller. Boom. And he just flapped to flops to the floor like nothing. And he's just not getting up.
Oh, no.
Unreal.
Wow.
A comeback victory that it was unbelievable. And of course, Joe Rogan, he's like, this is the best win in the UFC. Like, oh, okay, Joe Rogan with your, you know, but it is true. It was pretty amazing. But let's analyze this. Why did it happen? What was going on? First of all, I think Kamaru Usman had what I call George St. Pierre, Matt Serra syndrome. So do you remember George St. Pierre, Matt Serra won? So Matt Serra won the Ultimate Fighter by kind of like, I wouldn't say by chance because he's a good fighter, but he was older, counted out, but he's the hard worker and wound up winning the Ultimate Fighter in a resurgent time in his career. Like his career was basically over and he kind of came back and had a second win. But his career was kind of basically over. People were like, oh, Matt Serra's done. But he won the Ultimate Fighter. So the winner of the Ultimate Fighter got a title shot against George St. Pierre. That was the thing. It was like they're getting high-level guys to see who's going to fight George St. Pierre. But George St. Pierre was like, Matt Serra? Come on, this guy's old. He's done. And at that time, George St. Pierre was a bit of a new champion. And he got really into all the engagements that the UFC had forced him to do, like, you know, the press engagements he got. He's like, oh, they're making me do this, so I have to go this press engagement, this, and kind of like tone down his training. And of course he trained for the fight, but this is George St. Pierre's own words, right? He was so kind of distracted by the stuff, and he also, you know, he overlooked George, Matt Serra. He overlooked him. And Matt Serra knocked George St. Pierre out. He knocked him out. Wow. And he became the champion. And it shocked the world. And this was exactly the thing. I think Kamaru Usman overlooked Leon Edwards. He's like, this guy, I don't even have to train that hard. Mm. And, you know, I'm a big fan of Kamaru Usman. I think he's very good. But, you know, lately he's, I don't want to say he's arrogant, but I think he's sort of said, you know, he's saying things like, I'm the best athlete in the division. I'm the best this, I'm the best that. And yeah, you know, that might be true, but athletics doesn't replace hard work. Hard work, hard work. You got to put the time in the gym. And, you know, I think he maybe wasn't working as hard because he didn't respect Leon Edwards as much, you know? But the second thing is, Matt, if I'm right in front of you, should I, like, drop my hands? Do you think that I should do that?
No.
No, you should not. Keep
especially
those hands
up. 50 seconds
left. Right, right. Come on. And he could have coasted the fight too. That being said, I give him a lot of credit for not coasting. He's like, I want to win. Like, I like that. He comes out to win. But he had this split second of like, yeah, I got this. Like, what am I going to eat for dinner tonight? Cool, maybe some ribs. You know, like you tell he was like, I don't know. I don't want to say checked out, but he wasn't as like focused and aware as he should be. Mm. And when you're not there, when you're not like taking your opponent seriously, bad things happen. Yeah. I always say, do you remember what I said in a couple of podcasts ago? Never underestimate your opponent's ability to hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
Never underestimate someone's ability to hurt you. It doesn't matter if they're technical or not. If someone's standing in front of you and you're in the pocket, meaning you're in the distance of their foot or their fan can reach your face, you have to be on 100%. You have to understand that these people can kill you. Yeah. You know, I mean, can hurt you, right?
Yeah.
So that's what happened. It was amazing, but it was more a mistake of Usman than I think than the technical excellence of Leon Edwards, although his kick was beautiful. It was picture perfect. It was like a real technically picture perfect kick. But you know, Usman just gave, yeah, he just put his belt in a nice little gift box, wrapped the bow around it and said, here you go. Here's a present. Yeah. And you know, we saw that. Remember that Amanda Nunes Pena rematch? You know, you could just see that we talked about last week. It was like complete the second match. You know, the first match for the listeners, first match, you know, Pena beat Nunes soundly, but it seemed like Nunes was just having a really off day. And then she came back and just walloped her, you know, and I think 9 out of 10 times you know, Usman beats Leon Edwards. But it's a lesson for all of us that if you're in an engagement, you have to stay. If you're in range of someone, you know, and you're in an engagement, you have to stay focused and aware. And I always say, what is the most important self-defense skill, Matt?
Running away.
Okay. Great. No, you're right. So if you can disengage, you should always disengage. But that's less important than the other thing, because if you disengage, it means that you're aware, you recognize what was happening, right?
Awareness.
Yeah. Right. Awareness and focus. Awareness of what's going on. Focus and being on. Not like, hey, I'm checking my phone. Hey, I'll be home soon. Oh, somebody just mugged me. You know, or I'm listening to my music, not paying attention to my surroundings. Boom. Now, and then if you feel danger, you have to turn on. And, you know, there's this like level of like code red, code this. So there's like code red, meaning you're like, your dukes are up and you're fighting. Then there's code orange, where you're like very, very hyper aware, ready to fight. So that would be like the guy screaming in your face. He's not in your range, but he's screaming in your face, or he's, you know, 10 feet away from you. You're like, whoa, this is code orange, right? Man, this could go to code red right away, mm-hmm. right? And then there's code yellow. Code yellow is like a kind of overarching general awareness of a situation where you're not paranoid, but you're like, you know, hey, I'm in New York City. New York City is a tough place. I'm on the subway and it's, 11:30 at night. I gotta watch what's going on around me. I don't necessarily see anything bad, but you know, I can't just turn off, right? I have to be aware of what's going on so that I can disengage before it happens. So that I can, if I can't disengage, at least I'll have my chance to keep my hands up or do something defensively intelligent. That's really something important. And as I said, never, ever, ever underestimate the ability of someone to hurt you. And, you know, we talked about this on the side, but there's a tragedy that happened last week with a very, very famous Brazilian jiu-jitsu practitioner. And you're familiar what happened. Can you explain to the listeners what happened?
I don't remember.
His name is Leandro Lowe. And this is not to disrespect him in any way. First, I want to say that Leandro Lowe, by all accounts, although I never knew him, mm-hmm. but all accounts, was a really, really wonderful person. Mm-hmm. A great competitor in the sport of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. He's, I don't even know, 8-time world champion, something. He faced my old instructor, Lucas Lepre, a number of times and very often came out. But a number of times came out on top. Mm-hmm. In the world of jiu-jitsu, he's known as one of the greats, and also a very, very wonderful human being, a very good person, mm-hmm. Very great sportsman, all those things. You know, the things we aspire to as people. But you read what happened, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, some of the details are not readily available to me in front of me, but I understand he had it was a dance club or some sort of nightclub situation, and an altercation with a Brazilian police officer.
Yes.
That maybe felt disrespected.
That's right.
The police in Brazil have a history of, I don't say all of them, but that, I mean, no. some people are not above board over there.
Yes. I was in Brazil. It's the police that I encountered seemed less about law and order and more about their own lining their own pockets.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say, of course, it's not all police, but that's very common. Yeah. It's just the thing it is, right? It's not wrong to say that.
Yeah. I don't know the
details.
I
had friends and had experience to where, you know, the police would kind of shake down people sure. for money on a bus, especially if you're a gringo and you kind of like, not in the tourist area, you know, that it would happen more frequently. If you're a gringo living down there and you're in the like the local area and they go on a bus and they kind of just shake you down. You
Is know? That where the movie Man on Fire was set?
I think it was Mexico. I don't remember. Yeah.
It's a good movie.
Yeah. Oh, great movie. Do you know that movie was a remake of another movie?
Was it?
Yeah. Yeah. This Man on Fire was actually the Denzel Washington was a remake of a 1960s movie.
Oh.
Yeah. I didn't know that until recently.
Didn't know that.
Yeah. That's a great movie.
Yeah. Dakota Fanning.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. They played the kid. Yeah. Well, she's all an adult now.
Yeah. So there's a disagreement or altercation with him and the police officer. And
yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, and I'll tell you exactly what happened. So Leander Lowe was doing some sort of celebration. And again, this is all what we've read, so I was not there. But that's what a lot of the news sources say. And it was actually covered. Unfortunately, it was covered. Jiu-Jitsu doesn't get covered for its good things, but it's covered in CNN and a lot of major news outlets. So the reporting, I'm assuming, is generally correct. So it was a nightclub, like bar, restaurant, nightclub, and he was doing some celebration. He seemed to have like some kind of VIP table, and he had some champagne on his table. They were celebrating with some friends. And the police officer walked over and took the champagne bottle off his table, like just, hey, I'm going to steal it. And Leandro Lowe's like, dude, you can't do that. You can't just steal this champagne bottle off our table, you know? And then it became words. And the police officer tried to hit Leandro with the champagne bottle. So Leandro Lowe took him down and mounted him. And because he's such a nice guy, he says, dude, come on, calm down. This is cool. We can all relax. Tried to talk him down. And mounted him, completely controlled him. And using his jiu-jitsu skill, it didn't hurt him at all, didn't throw a punch, didn't do anything, just talking him down and said, hey, let's chill, you know, we can all relax, like let's go back to just being this. The problem is there's a lot of books on violence, and I want to take a little detour to what happened. So there's predatory violence, which is like, you know, Jeffrey Dahmer, or like people who sit there and they're looking for prey. Right? You know, like, hey, I want to mug you. So I'm going to sit in a corner, wait for someone to, you know, be unaware, and then I'm going to mug you. Right? Or there's like Jeffrey Dahmer stalking, you know, victims or whatever. Like bad people who are actual criminal predators. Right? There's one. But there's also the socially motivated violence, meaning I need to show my dominance in the social hierarchy. You know, the gorilla dance, the monkey dance, as some people call it. Mark McYoung has a lot of really good stuff on this, analysis of why people engage in violence. And if you can make someone feel, particularly people who have very little in their lives, their social standing can be extraordinarily important to them. And also, this is hardwired in who we are. Imagine, Matt, you know, 20,000, you know, 10,000 years ago, we all lived in some tribe. And that tribe would have a hierarchy, right? Now, if I'm going lower and lower and lower on the totem pole, you know, I probably eat last. Or maybe I get excommunicated from the tribe. Or whatever. Who knows what happens? That's not always the case, and I'm certainly no anthropologist. I know there's a lot of studies that prehistoric humans were very cooperative too, but hierarchies are a thing, you know.
Sure.
And so we are hardwired, even as primates. The primate groups have hierarchies, and you notice that there's the silverback gorilla is who controls the tribe, and then there are the young gorillas, and a lot of times they're driven out. So that's kind of wired, a little bit hardwired in us to understand that for males, social hierarchy is a very important thing. Particularly, I think, when you have very little in your life, or you grow up in bad neighborhoods or neighborhoods with a lot of crime, your social standing is extraordinarily important, right? Yeah. So if I make you look bad in front of other people, your response will not to be like, oh, okay, bygones be bygones. No, your response is, motherfucker, I have to take back my social standing. A lot of what we do as dumb, toxic males is performative violence, performative actions to maintain our social standing, right? And it's performing to other males. Mm-hmm. Now, imagine if you saw someone who was very aggressive and said, you know, I'm the man, I'm a police officer, I could do whatever the hell I want, I could steal a bottle of paint, and some guy mounts you and completely emasculates you and makes you look bad in front of everybody in the nightclub, and you know all the people would stop dancing and probably watching him. Mm-hmm. What the hell? Do you think he's going to be like, oh, okay, Leandro, hey, that's cool. Okay, we'll call it bygones be gone. Do you think that's going to happen? No, it's not. And I can show you many fights. You may, you know, Ryan Hall in the UFC.
Mm-hmm.
There's a fight in that he got into an altercation with a I wouldn't say deranged, but a very, very emotionally uncharged person. And they were eating, sitting down eating like in a pizza restaurant or that Italian restaurant. This guy comes in, causes havoc. Ryan Hall pins him, controls him, same thing. Winds up letting him up. And what does the guy do? He attacks him again. Like, so this is actually very, very common. And we had some guests on who spoke about this too, where the minute you let them up, they attack them again. And it's another thing about Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu is that unlike striking, once I've let you up, if I haven't done anything, like in terms of breaking your arms, I have done nothing.
Yeah, sure.
You know, so you feel completely emasculated, but you don't really feel like anything happened. And going back to the Gracie in Action, remember the old Gracie in Action tapes?
No,
the tapes where the Gracies are beating people. You ever seen them? Okay, no. So they're pretty cool. They're like, this is like from the late 80s, early 90s. And people would come to the Gracie Academy and they would like, you know, challenge the Gracies to like a MMA fight or sometimes just with slaps or whatever, right? And this is one dude, this Taekwondo dude, and he gets taken down, dominated, and then, you know, the Gracies let him up and he's like, I want to go again. You know, I want to go again. And they can't fathom what just happened because they're not actually getting hurt. Because the person on top, the jiu-jitsu practitioner, is being very, very merciful.
Yeah.
Now, of course, that's a controlled gym setting. You know, everything's controlled. So the question is, in the street, when you are engaged in an altercation and you're being overly merciful, you can be in danger when you let them up. And we know what happened. Leandro let him up, said, hey, everything's cool, right? The guy pulled a gun and shot Leandro in the head and killed him. It was a terrible, terrible tragedy. Terrible. And I hope that guy goes to prison for the rest of his life or even, I'm not the biggest supporter of the death penalty, but you know what? A guy like that deserves it, you know? Mm-hmm. It's a horrible, awful thing. But it also brings me to, and this is not to criticize, I'm not trying to criticize Leandro, but there's a kind of like, a kind of interesting similarity between Kamaru Usman and what happened here, you know? You're in the pocket and you're kind of not paying attention. You're not respecting the other person's ability to hurt you. So he mounted this guy and he's like, hey, we're good. And you're not respecting when you let him up. This is the guy's ability to hurt him. Now, of course, he did have a weapon, but he could have also just tried to attack him again. You know, and maybe bite you or this or that. Who knows? And so I was very lucky that I had an instructor who, he went through Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu when the streets of Rio were much more uncontrolled than they are today. And they're still not, I don't think they're like amazing, but it's a lot better than it used to be. Mm. And so he would tell me stories. This is on the podcast one time. He's like, you know, if you're in a club and you want to beat someone up, this is how you do it. You know, like, so you get out of the club because he's like, you don't want to be kicked out of the club because you can't go there next week. It was kind of funny, right? So he's like, this is how you do it. You wait in a corner and you do this, and this is how you did, and this is how you beat a guy up in a club. And then another one was like, when guys are shooting at you, this is what you do. You know, and I'm like, oh, man, this guy's really been in it. People have actually shot at him. You know, like, I remember one instructor, this is a different instructor, saying how he jumped in the water when guys were shooting at him, and then he crawled underneath the pier because they couldn't see him, right? And you know, like, he's like, this is how you get cover, right? And they had these knowledge of like extreme situations. I don't wish these extreme situations on anyone, but Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu in its original form was built on understanding the dynamics of violence. Sport Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu has none of this. Has none of this. I've trained with many, many guys who are sports jiu-jitsu champions, and they don't even know how to block a punch. That's okay. I mean, I'm not trying to denigrate people, but when you've engaged in a violent scenario, you have to understand the dynamics of the violent scenario. So what you do is, if you're in the same situation, you mount someone, the first thing you do is you immobilize them and make sure that the weapon is not deployed. And, you know, we had Burton Richardson on, the famous JKD guy, and he has a huge amount of stuff on this. You know, he's very interested in self-defense because, as he said in our podcast, and I recommend our listeners to go back and listen to it, they did a horrible incident of where he was abducted as a kid and almost murdered. And so he's very into, like, using jiu-jitsu in the self-defense context and all this stuff, right? He has, you know, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu for the street, MMA for the street, these kind of things, right? And I recommend that program to anyone. But I would also say that you need to make sure that the weapon isn't in play and it can't be deployed. The second thing is, if you let that guy up, that guy is going to attack you. So you don't let them up unless security is ready to take over or you've incapacitated them in some way. Now, it's very interesting because if you choke a guy out the way people choke out in an academy, a lot of times people will wake up a couple seconds later, and then they'll be okay and they'll be fine. So there's a specific technique, and I can't really go into it over the listed podcast, but there's a technique of applying a rear naked choke that I learned from my instructors that when you apply it and they'll be woozy for a long, long time and you're gone or you're there, they will not be normal for a while. And there's a specific things you do. It has to do with the rotation of your elbow and using your forearm and also understanding when unconsciousness happens and continuing to choke a little bit after that. That being said, of course, we're not trying to kill anybody. But when you're aware of how these steps happen and someone teaches it to you from someone who's been there in the street, it's very different when you're learning a rear naked choke from someone who's just competed in sport jiu-jitsu and they tap and then you let them go. So you have to know how to use a rear naked choke to incapacitate the person. So when they do wake up, they're like a zombie. And I wouldn't say that I'm like the most amazing street trained guy ever, but I have had to use it in a restraint context. When I was doing a little bit of security work, I did choke someone out. And I choked them out. And when they woke up, they couldn't really stand on their 2 feet for about, I would say, 3 minutes. Wow. Yeah. And of course, at the same time, I was restraining them because I knew the guy, you know, could. And I did a weapon search. And what I did was I made sure their hands were dominated and they were not, you know, they could breathe, though. I was not doing something that, you know, that we've seen in police brutality scenarios. You always make sure the guys can breathe and that's that. But you're also restraining them and you're waiting for the rest of security to come and take them away. And I'll tell you another one. Matt Serra, who we just talked about, got into an altercation. I think that was in Las Vegas. Again, it was in a restaurant. And he's actually, you know what? I think it was in a mall. Mall, like a mall food court. I don't know. But he's eating somewhere, right? And he restrains this guy. And he waits till, it's very smart, he waits till the security comes. And then the security comes, take over. The funny thing is the security are not really well trained. So the guy gets crazy again and Matt, he does have to dominate it again. But they do it in a way that the three of them, the two security guards and Matt Serra, kind of cooperate. And then they arrest the guy. So you don't let people go until other people are ready to step in. Or you put them unconscious and make sure there are no weapons in play. Mm-hmm. And this is something that I was taught by one of my old instructors, like how to do this on the street, because that was his, like, jiu-jitsu is for the street. There was no sport jiu-jitsu, right? It was the valitude on the street, and really the idea was the street. So, you know, it's very important to understand if you're in an engagement, how to survive that. And I'd say to listeners, number one, if you're in an engagement, obviously you want to get away, you know that. But when you immobilize people, first and foremost, assume there's a weapon in play and make sure you're immobilizing them and their hands aren't free and you're finding where those weapons could be. And then if you cannot dominate their arms and stop that weapon from being in play, you have to put them out, you know, in ways that they cannot wake up. Or you control them until security steps in. And that's actually very common. There was a guy, and he's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt here in New York. His name is Mo, I forgot his last name, but he's a Filipino-American gentleman. He's a black belt under Marcel Garcia. He got into a street fight, a street altercation. He was preventing a mugging, I believe. And he dominated the guy, took him down, mounted him, didn't throw any punches. dominated the guy and held in there until it's called the police and held in there until the police came. And that's really what you're supposed to do, what you should do. Mm-hmm. You know, that being said, I do believe in the power of the rear naked choke. and there's an interview with him. He says that carotid restraint is illegal. That's not true. Your carotid restraint is not illegal if your life is threatened or you feel in danger. And that's only required for police officers to show that they can't do the carotid restraint unless their life is threatened. But interpersonal conflict, if your life is threatened, you can do whatever you want, right? It's not like a rear naked choke under New York laws is illegal. That is not true. That is a misreading of the law. That being said, it is a felony if you do a choke on someone. It's a felony assault if you do a choke on someone and there's no reason for you. Like if I just walk behind you and put a choke hold on you for no reason whatsoever, it could be construed a felony. Right? You know, like that.
You wanted to do that earlier when you surprised me.
I did not. I tapped you on the shoulder.
Yeah, but
and
you
said
wanted
hello.
To.
Why did I would not do that?
I could sense the
aggression. Matt, I never want to hurt you badly other than tasering you. Yeah. The few times I have. And you've got me back so bad too.
Yeah.
Like it's a give and really take. Bad. It's a give and take. We're like a very, very sadistic, masochistic relationship.
Speaking
here.
Of give and take, you took something.
I took something. What did I take?
Well, you took. I don't know how to phrase that. You finally saw Real Steel.
Oh no, I'd seen it before.
Oh, you just
yeah,
watched
yeah,
it
yeah.
again.
Watch okay. it again. Yes, right. for you. But I didn't make it all the way through because I was getting super sleepy.
Yeah, but it was 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yes, yeah. So like, Real Steel came on TV. And I was like, oh, it's Matt's movie. I was like, wow, this movie's entertaining. Yeah. It's like a very heartwarming story. Aww. It's very hard. But I mean, in all seriousness, my heart goes out to, you know, the individuals, you know, Leander Lowe's family, and it's a terrible thing. There's also, we're going to post up, but there's a charity link to help Leander Lowe's. They're setting up a Leander Lowe like a fund to help kids do jiu-jitsu, and someone else, one of his family members, go to college, which he was supporting. So if anybody has some time to contribute and help out the family, that's great. But what I would say is it's a terrible tragedy, but it's something that we can understand. First, awareness, and never underestimate the power of someone to hurt you, even if you've already dominated them. If you dominated them for 5 rounds or you mounted them, whatever, you cannot turn off until you're completely disengaged from the scenario or someone else has stepped in, right? Or, you know, the bell is rung and you are, the fights are over, right? You know, you've completely disengaged. You cannot turn off that sense of like, hey, I could be hurt here. You know, every time I've been in, I've not to say there have been so many self-defense altercations, I have not, but every time I've been in, I've always been very, very aware after the fact, particularly in one situation where I was like, I was doing security, and then I'm like, because I remember a story of someone who, after they threw a person out of a club, they left the club. This is an old club called Palladium. In New York, they had this club called Palladium. It's a dorm for NYU now. But it used to be this very famous club. And the bouncer threw someone out because they were, you know, unruly. And then when the bouncer got off work, the person came over and did a drive-by and killed them. Jeez. That was many years ago. So I did a security. When I was doing security, I would always walk out of the place where I was doing the security, and I would be like, man, if I threw someone out today, this person could be trying to meet me right here and get revenge, you know? Mm. And the escalation between performative monkey dance and actual life and death violence is way more common than you think. Way more common. You know, there's a number of incidents that happened in the Bronx recently where it was like words were spoken, this and that. And there's no reason, there's no money involved, it's not a mugging, it's just words, but it's these two people of this, you know, bout of, you know, hyper-masculinity. And then one person takes a knife and kills the other person right away. Like that desire to maintain your street cred, your rep, your place in the social hierarchy is very strong, and that leads to violence way more often than you would think. And lethal violence can often lead to lethal violence. So I would say when this is what I say to everybody in my academy when I talk about self-defense, like when someone's engaging in verbal violence, meaning anger, yelling, this and that, that fight is on. I'm not saying fists are flying, but you are in an engagement of violence. Right now it's verbal violence, but you're in an engagement of violence. Make sure it doesn't escalate. Make distance, fine. But don't, now you got to start understanding that this could escalate further and you could get hurt. I've seen so many times where, you know, road rage, the guy goes, oh, you cut me off. And the guy's yelling. The guy's like, oh, I'm sorry. Pop, and punches him in the face. Not understanding that verbal violence is an indicator of that primate monkey dance, you know, desire to dominate and protect your hierarchy, and they will go to physical violence very, 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 very soon. Some people will do that. Yeah. Anyway, sorry to take away from the real steel conversation.
The ego is a fragile thing.
Ego is a fragile thing for many people. Yeah. For many people. And it's unhealthy, psychologically unhealthy. They're unhealthy people, but that doesn't take away from the fact that they could hurt you. And it's something that you have to understand that dynamic. Yeah, but okay. Let's make it nice.
All right.
So, why is Real Steel such a movie that you like so much?
It's cool fighting.
It was actually pretty fun to watch.
And I feel like that's the direction we need to go.
Robots. You know, there's some Real Steel ripoffs in Japanese anime where it's like a Robobox, I think, is one of them, where it's like it's kind of like the same thing, except it's like instead of robots, complete robots, it's like humans who put on like cybernetic enhanced, and then they box. So it's like the guy has this like, you know, superpowered arm when he punches. Yeah,
that's cool. There's a
your brain would be too mush like that.
There was a movie that came out recently. It was like a combination of Real Steel, I guess, and The Running Man.
Well, what movie is this?
I think it's called Gamer.
And Gamer.
It's the guy from 300.
Gerard Butler.
Yeah. And so there's
That guy's been in so many bad movies.
It's a bad movie. And
it's, I was like at 3 in the morning. I was watching this movie Greenland that he's in. It's basically like a world and world comes to an end kind of thing. Like a
so many
deep impact. Yeah, there's so many. And this one was like, wow, this is really bad.
But this is interesting because it's like all these criminals that are like on death row or whatever. It's basically Running Man, like all this, and then people like on the outside can take control of these people and play real life shooting video games like Call of Duty with real people and real bullets.
Oh, so they have some sort of like implant in their head.
So they just get taken over by some teenager in North Dakota that controls this person's body.
Disgusting.
And with real bullets and stuff. Yeah. And if they win like 10 matches in a row, they get to go free. So weird.
But they're not even controlled. Because I know there's a Jason Statham movie. It's like a death race movie where it's like, oh, you know,
another one of those.
Yeah. There's so many bad movies recently.
People just want to give up control.
Yeah. Oh, guess what? I saw Old Man. We talked about it in the last podcast. I saw that fight scene and the other ones. And I think some of the fights are very well choreographed. They're very realistic.
Yeah.
Did you watch the entire series?
Yeah.
Yeah, do you know the fight scene where he's in the rental, the Airbnb rental with the woman, and then the assassin comes?
Mm-hmm.
And
spoiler alert.
I know, right? Sorry. Spoiler alert.
It's like episode 2.
Yeah, right. Oh, it's 2? Yeah, it's number 3. I think it's 3. Yeah. So, okay. Sorry, guys. Everybody gets on me so much for the spoiler alerts. But I mean, you know an assassin's going to come because whatever, right?
He was a shitty assassin.
He was not up there in the assassin level, right? I was a little disappointed with that assassin.
The whole time.
I know, right? But that fight scene was, I thought, very well choreographed. Yeah. It seemed much more real than cinematic.
It felt, you could feel panic.
Yeah. You know what I liked about the scene that you showed me is he's getting tired. You never see that.
Both of them, they stand up and they just go.
That's real. Yeah. That's real. There's only one other fight that I saw. This is actually really hilarious. It's a Guy Ritchie movie called Rock and Rolla. Have you seen that movie?
No.
It's fun. It's kind of ridiculous, but it's fun. So it's this like Russian mobster chasing Gerard Butler. It's actually Gerard Butler again. And And Gerard Butler is like, I can't beat this guy because he's just too tough. So he just starts running. And the guy runs after him. And they're just running. And then as the guy gets progressively more and more tired, Gerard is like, this is cool. And then he just takes like a brick and hits him or something. I forgot. I forgot what happens. But they're like both exhausted.
Yeah.
And then he'll got to throw a punch. And then Gerard Butler will run again. But it's actually kind of interesting because, you know, we as human beings were designed in terms of fighting to be aerobic, you know, aerobically based fighters. What I mean by that is how did human beings kill prey, like kill their meals in ancient times? Do you know?
How ancient?
Like, you know, like prehistoric, you know, like caveman people.
Strangle it?
No.
Wait for it to die?
Right. Wait, well, how? Okay, so you know, okay, so there's a big like water buffalo or not a water, but like some elephant or something, whatever, woolly mammoth, I don't know, whatever. How are you guys going to kill a woolly mammoth to survive? You need that meat. What are you going to do?
Throw some spears at it.
Right, but it's really big, so it starts charging you.
Yeah.
Right? And then
run it off a cliff.
You run away. No, you run away. And then maybe the woolly mammoth runs and you chase it and you run and you chase it. And it's this run it to ground is the expression. But basically, they'll run predators down because a lot of predators like cheetahs and stuff, they're really fast for like, you know, 2 minutes. But they can't maintain that pace for like 20 minutes. So our hunting style in prehistoric times was to out cardio our prey. And use spears. You're right, but out cardio our prey, not like attack it like a, you know, like a blitzkrieg. But it was like, okay, we attack it, we run away, it runs away, we chase it, we attack it a little bit again, it runs away, we run away, we follow it, keeping distance, and like understanding that the cardio, our cardio ability to run is actually the number one reason we survived, and it's also why we outperformed Neanderthals. So I'm actually trying to get a guy on the podcast to talk about it. He's like, he talks about Neanderthal and prehistoric human combat, like how they fought and how they've hunted. But it's really interesting, you know? Mm-hmm. So like getting tired in a fight always happens. Mm-hmm. And like anybody who's ever fought knows this. The minute you get tired, you're in trouble. Mm-hmm. So cardio is actually our number one thing in all of our abilities to survive, and it's why we outcompeted Neanderthals. Yeah, and so if you're in a fight and you get tired, you're gonna be dead.
Yeah.
But it's nice to see that some fights, like understanding how important cardio is, and sometimes it's not exciting to see two old guys panting, but that's the reality of it. That's why also street fights last so short, because people get tired.
Yeah.
Oh, did you see the MMA guy defending himself? I think it's in Vegas or something. Did you see the video?
No.
So he's actually fighting like three, you know, dumb like douchebag frat boys, but they all attack him at once, and it's actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
And he's moving around, and he keeps hitting them and moving around, keeping distance, and he double legs a guy, and gets up right away, moves around, and then the frat boys get tired, and he just kills them. All three of them are tired, and he's super fresh.
Oh, wow.
Right? I mean, it's like it's, you know, I don't encourage street violence, but it's a great example of that. Of like, okay, you know, oh, how can one guy survive 3-on-1? Very, very difficult. Very difficult. But what he does is he moves around, and uses boxing, uses his wrestling, doesn't engage any one person too long, and then they keep chasing him, and they get tired, and once they're tired, they're toast. They're toast.
That's funny.
Anyway. But anyway, so that's it. You know, the rule, the closing thing is never underestimate anyone's ability to hurt you, and to understand when you're in an engagement. Self-preservation comes from awareness,
mm-hmm.
and that sense of caution, and don't let people up after you've taken them down, and in the fourth round, 55 seconds left, don't like be like, hey, I got this,
stay in
it. Just stay there, right?
Yeah.
You're in a pocket, you're in danger.
I underestimated people's ability to hurt me in my first couple of relationships.
Okay, I know you mean that as a joke, but that's true.
I'm sure, yeah.
No, that's like, it's not just, okay, so I know you said it as a joke, and I'm sorry, you know, that you heard that. You know, some people broke your heart, maybe. But it's true. Don't underestimate people's ability to hurt you in all circumstances, not just physical. And, you know, like, I've had some experiences with human relationships, not my girlfriends and stuff, but human relationships where I got really, really hurt. You know, like, I mean, it really was like, whoa. Mm-hmm. So when you put yourself out there, you know, a lot of times people can hurt you. So I'm not saying don't be vulnerable, but understand that when you are vulnerable, this person could hurt you. So right now I'm not try to be bitter or anything like that, but at the same time, I'm more cautious with people and my vulnerabilities, right? And this is not girlfriends and stuff. I'm talking like, you know, relationships and with other friends.
You don't have any girlfriends?
I have a wife. Yeah. But people's ability to hurt you on an emotional level is just the same as on a physical. You meant it as a little bit of a joke, but it's true.
Yeah.
It's very true. You know, you're like, oh, we're friends, we're buddies, or this and that. And, you know, I'll say I had an issue with someone who really, really hurt my feelings a long time ago. So we'll get too personal, but I was like, did a lot for this person, a lot. And then I really, really, really needed a favor, small thing to help in getting married with my wife and stuff. We needed some paperwork stuff done, right? And that person was like not helpful about it. Mm-hmm. And to this day, it's like, you know, I gotta let it go, but it hurt, and it really hurt. It was like years, you're like, oh, this person's like, it's family, and they're wonderful, and, you know, anytime, you know, I'll do anything for them, you know, I'll take a bullet for them, because they're like family. And then you ask them one simple thing, like, nah, I'm not gonna do that, you know? Like, dude, that hurts.
Yeah.
You know? And then they're like, well, people close to you, guess what? They have the ability to hurt you. Mm. Don't underestimate it. And I'm not saying be paranoid. Don't be paranoid, but don't be, oh my God, I'll never let myself be vulnerable again. No. But you know, don't be surprised if sometimes these things happen, and you gotta roll with those punches.
Yeah.
You know? And be a little bit cautious too. You know, like, well, you know, maybe they don't see the relationship in the same way you do, you know? They just see your relationship as more transactional, yeah, while you thought it was like we were actual friends, you know? Yeah. And it happens to a lot of martial art instructors. You know, the word crianche, which is betrayer, you know, like you went and trained at another academy. There was a post from, I mentioned this before, but you know, what's her name? The female fighter who lost to Ronda Rousey twice. She just came back. Misha Tate. Misha Tate's old MMA coach, Robert Fallas, killed himself. Because, you know, it's like MMA is kind of, being coach is sometimes a thankless profession. You give all to these people and they just kind of like, you know, I'm kind of done with you. I'm going to train with these people now. And you see yourself as a father figure to these people, and you're helping them and do this. And a lot of times, like, I know so many coaches who took financial hits to help grow their charges, to help grow their students. And they're like, yeah, you know, I'm done with you. Oh, that hurts. And I know I'm not in the family of Robert Fallas and that tragedy, but I know that there were a lot of like blows that happened that made him feel very isolated and unappreciated, and took him to a very, very dark place, and unfortunately took his life. But, you know, like, people can hurt you. You never underestimate the ability of someone to hurt you emotionally, and it can be, emotional wounds sometimes are worse than the physical. Obviously, if you're dead, that's not true, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's tough. Yeah. Oh, what a bummer podcast.
Yeah. I need some sugar.
Yes.
You need a donut or something.
You need it. Yeah.
I heal my emotions with food. That's why.
Stress eating. Yeah. I used to stress eat. I used to stress eat. Over the pandemic, I stressed eat a lot. You know, I told you I ballooned up, partially because of my injury and my surgery, but I want to make excuses. Over the pandemic, I was really bummed out for a while. And I, you know, I got kind of depressed because my business closed down. And you know, you understand, right? Yeah. And I started stress eating. And, you know, I was like, yes, donuts taste good. And I got really, really overweight.
Yeah. Only thing I could find in the stores was pasta. So that's all I eat.
Pasta's
7
delicious.
7 days a week.
Oh, yo, really? Yeah.
For pasta. A while, yeah. It's not good for you.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. But, yeah.
So. Real Steel's a good movie. Go check
Real Steel's a good movie. Still a good movie, but Gamer is not.
Gamer is, it's a, you know, if you're high and want some popcorn movie to watch
I
people
do not
shoot
endorse
each other.
Marijuana. I'm sorry, old school.
I just meant like standing on top of a building.
Oh, right, okay.
What were you talking about? Inappropriate.
What movie have you seen recently that you really liked?
I saw Thor last weekend.
Oh, was it good?
It was okay.
It was okay. Yeah, that's, everybody says it was okay.
Yeah.
In terms of Marvel, I just saw the latest installment of the Marvel TV shows, the She-Hulk TV show.
Oh, yeah. I think that's pretty good.
Oh, it was hilarious. Yeah. Everybody's like, everybody hates it now because it's like, it's so woke. Because she's like, I control my anger better than you because I'm a woman. I have to deal with it. And that's some real truth right there. Maybe you don't want to hear
it's
it.
Honesty, yeah.
But, you know... It's a lot tougher being a woman in this world than it is being a guy generally.
Yeah,
sure. It is. And although, you know, obviously first world problems are much less severe than third world problems, you know. You don't have to worry about like, you know, gangs of militia people coming into your village and murdering you and raping you and all that. But still.
Some
like,
women
first,
do.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Right, right. But you know, first world problems are legit. You
problems
know?
Are problems.
Problems are problems. But yeah, so you know what movie I saw that I really liked, and it was recently shoot. I saw the new Game of Thrones episode.
I was never really big. I mean, I watched it, but never really. I didn't even watch the last season. Is it good?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The new show. I didn't have my hopes up because I was like, whatever. The first episode was amazing. It was drama, and you know, there's this scene. Spoilers. Okay, everybody tune out if you don't want to. But it's a birth scene that has some tragedy involved.
Yeah.
And it's not fantasy. That's real. Like, man, I think a lot of human beings have gone through this where, you know, it's a breech birth and the baby's life is... And this is, of course, you know, medicine and, you know, medieval time medicine. So it's not as advanced. So it's a breech birth and they have to perform a cesarean section. And this is real. Like, that's real stuff. And I mean, not even 100 years ago, 1920s, 1930s, you know, women dying in childbirth is like actually very common thing. And to see that scene and the husband having to make a choice between the life of the baby or the life of the wife. And oh, man, it was like really powerful. Mm-hmm. And I won't say what happened. But it's very
a
very,
dragon came in and ate them both.
Well, there's a dragon. There are a couple dragons, but no,
that's what happened.
But it's an explosive start to the season. I really really liked it.
That's right.
I really enjoyed it. Yeah, and I also watched it for not having to subscribe to HBO. So it was good.
How'd you do that?
It's you know, there's streams around. You know,
well, they're not very reliable, are they?
I get this weird box that someone bought for me, and it just kind of gives me everything.
Can you get football games?
Yeah, all the football, everything.
I have such a hard time watching football games. Let's talk.
Oh, yeah. It's this weird thing that somebody bought for me. It's I don't know what it's called, but they clicked it to my TV, and you click it on, and then you can watch anything you want for free. And it's, like, technically not illegal because it's, like, you're just you're not downloading anything. You're just kind of like watching the streams that other people put on. Well, the stuff other people put on is illegal, but you're yeah. That being said, you
you're
know, like
distributing it. You're just
right.
Ingesting.
I think when you're dealing with people who are creating things like Dune was one example, and I think Game of Thrones, I'll do it too. You know, it's like when they're creating something that you want, you should like pay the money. Right? Mm-hmm. You should support the creativity. So like I watched Dune illegally because somebody sent it to me illegally, but then I went and bought the movie as well. And because it's just like, hey, this is a great movie, I want to support it. But when it comes to some pay-per-view companies in MMA, I do not do that because they actually sued me. The company will go unmanaged. So I got sued by the or threatened by a certain MMA company whose first, you know, first letter of the acronym starts with the U and the last acronym starts with the C, ends with the C and has an F in the middle. And they really came down and threatened me because I was watching the UFC in my academy, privately though, I paid for it, but not illegally. But I watched it in my academy with some people and they felt that that was like a misuse. And it was like five people, but it was just more comfortable to watch in the academy. And they sued me for $75,000.
And you...
We fought it, but we had to settle and I had to give them a whole crap load of money.
Shit.
No, that's not a joke. I had to give them a whole... But it's actually not the UFC. It's the UFC's distribution company. It's called J something Enterprises. Like, so it's not the UFC itself. It's their... pay-per-view distribution company, but they do boxing and they go after people. And they actually sent the spot, they sent this guy to my academy. So while we're watching it, the guy comes in because I post on something that, hey, you know, bring some food for the academy. We're gonna have, like, you know, a couple guys are gonna come and watch it at the academy. And I paid for it. I completely paid for it, you know, and it wasn't illegal and it was like five of us. So what was the difference watching it at home or watching the academy? But because the academy is registered as a business, whatever. So they came after me and they sent the spy. The guy's like, oh, I'm just checking around to see what's going on. And he took pictures of us and weird. And then they had all the evidence and then they sued us. But then we settled out of court, but I paid them a lot of money. So you know what? If I happen to see an illegal stream, I don't distribute. I'm not distributing it. Mm-hmm. I didn't do that. I didn't. But I'm just saying if it happens to show up on my feed somehow, I don't care. I'm not participating in distributing anything illegally. But you know, this box thing.
Multi-million-dollar company.
Yeah, right,
comes after five people.
Yeah. And they do it quite often. And I mean, they sued me for a lot of money. It was really a terrible experience too. It was right when we started opening up the academy. It was like five of us sitting around eating like baked ziti and having, you know, like a potluck party, just fun, you know, like some people, like, you know, and then it was just turned into a nightmare. So that's why I don't do any UFC viewing at my academy anymore.
Only Bellator.
Any pay-per-view, but it's the same. Sure, yeah. No, it's funny. It's the same pay-per-view company. It's like this one company. I forgot what it's called. Like John Enterprises. I forgot what it's called. But they are the pay-per-view distributors, and they basically have like a monopoly. And so if they send out these private investigators to scour social media if you posted something, and if you're like a bar or any commercial establishment that doesn't have the, because you have to buy the right to show it at a bar, and that costes like $20,000, you know, like to show one UFC. My it's like $15,000 to show it at a bar.
Here's what, right? We get a Mac.
Because you're, you know, it's supposed to be like 100 people with buying drinks and things like that, but I'm like, this is like five people eating like ziti or whatever we're eating. I don't remember what we're eating. Eat something healthy.
Post on Instagram with like 10 different fake accounts that, oh, next UFC is going to be, and they give an address and just waste their time.
Yeah, that would be great.
They go all the way, send them to the deep Bronx.
Exactly.
I'm just looking around. What are you looking for, brother?
Exactly.
Where? Oh, be aware of your surroundings, UFC spies.
Yes. But I gave them so much money that I feel that I have at least 200 or 300 pay-per-views that I can watch illegally without damaging.
That should have been part of the settlement. I need credit to at least watch exactly. Legally me one stream in my home.
That being said, I'm not saying that I've illegally watched anything. I've not said that. I'm just saying if it so happens to show up, I would...
Can't control your eyes?
I can't... Yeah, I can't control.
It's like a woman in a yoga pants walks in front of you. You can't control your field of view.
Yeah, right. That being said, I'm never admitting to even watching it.
Never said.
I don't even
know what UFC is. What does it stand for?
What does it stand for again?
United Federation of
Planets. No. That's Star Trek.
Coopers. I don't know. All right. Well, thanks for listening. Be aware.
Absolutely.
We'll see you next week.
And if you're watching the UFC illegally, be good aware. On you.
Get them. Okay.
Thanks for listening. Follow us on Twitter at @Marshall_culture and on Instagram at @MarshallCultureCast. Please leave a review on iTunes, and we'll see you next time on the Marshall Culture Podcast.